For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Early voting has already started for the primary election, and all eyes this Tuesday will likely be on the Republican race for governor. A recent poll shows a virtual three-way tie with former Oklahoma City Mayor Mick Cornett at 21%, while Lieutenant Governor Todd Lamb and Tulsa businessman Kevin Stitt at 20%. Neva, is this where you expected to be coming into Tuesday's primary?
I think it is, and part of that's a reflection of the amount of money being spent. We all know that in a statewide race, you have to be competitive in the dollars raised and spent to really be in the ballgame at the end, and now we see the three top contenders in all of the polls consistently have been Lamb and Cornett and Stitt. So I think the interesting scenario now that everyone begins to look at is, of those two that make the runoff, where do these other pockets of votes and support go after the primary in the runoff? Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the fascinating thing to watch as we see all of this play out.
And also, of course, with Kevin Stitt, you've got he's his own donor. So, you can put he's $2.4 million into his own account. That helps a lot.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt to have the ability to invest that kind of money in your campaign. And in the waning days, if you see a big ad buy from your opponent, you don't have to get on the phone with donors. You can immediately tap into your own pocket and do that. That's a big advantage. I am a little surprised that I really expected that at this point in the race that Todd Lamb would have a little bit more of a cushion, and that there would be a race for second place between a second and third place folks. But right now it seems to be an all-out fight between the three top candidates, Stitt, Lamb, and Cornett. And, with Lamb, this guy has been running for governor for at least 8 years. Mm-hmm. I said earlier that, he's been running since the Alfalfa Bill Murray administration was in power in Oklahoma. And so it would be a huge surprise if for some reason Stitt and Cornett end up in the runoff and Lamb is left behind. Lamb's, I feel like he's feeling that pressure right now. He's flailing. You can see that with his campaign right now. He's flailing about a little bit. He's trying to embrace both the fact that he is the experienced insider and also embracing Donald Trump, the consummate outsider. Yeah. He's trying to do a little of both there. I don't know how well that's going to work for him. And I think that demonstrates the problem that Lamb has, that if he walks into a general election, if he is the nominee in a general election, Drew Edmondson, who I think by all accounts is going to be the Democratic nominee for governor, he would have a real line of attack against Todd Lamb for his insider status, for his proximate place in power with the Fallon administration and the legislature and the debacle that we've seen over the last several years.
How does a politician just walk that fine line between being a career politician? He's been around for decades, but he's also
I think the bigger takeaway is less about what Ryan just said to me and more about someone who has been in public life for a long time and has built relationships in all of those 77 counties. And it gets down to this ground game that we always talk about of who can get their voters out and whose voters are most loyal and most intense. You have a lot of folks that'll say, I might be for this person if polled one day, but that might change tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And will they even go to the polls? Even if they are a likely voter. So you've got a very fluid situation where at the end of all of that, it will be that hardcore predictable Republican base, primary voter, which is demographically an older voter, and certainly in that regard, someone that they know, someone that they're very familiar with, has a decided advantage. And I think that's where when you look at this race, Todd Lamb sets up to be the individual that can really take advantage of that part of the equation. So, I think as we see this play out, it's at the end, it's less about any one particular message, inside, outside, whatever. And it's more about, do you have people that really are fully committed to you and are going to take the action necessary to go put their vote, in and make sure that you have the opportunity to be successful?
Early voting is underway right now. Yeah. Neva's right. Right now it's ground game time. This is ground game time. And, I think that we may see some last minute negative hits over the weekend. If they are, we don't expect them to see them on TV. They'll probably be in some targeted mailboxes around the state or some robocalls. But early voting has started, and you know, Donald Trump was kind of an aberration in terms of field and ground game. He didn't really have field or ground game at all. He operated entirely off of the intensity of his base to show up,
and he was well known beforehand.
But with even these three candidates, despite how well-known they are, I think that they don't have that. They can't trade in that same kind of intensity. They're going to have volunteers out on doors, dragging voters to the polls, calling folks, giving them rides. And that is a massive undertaking. That's like moving an army. And whoever can do that best over the next several days with early voting and then actually on Election Day on Tuesday, I think that they're going to find themselves in the runoff.
And I think you see that even on the Democratic side, where Drew Edmondson has really barely cracked 50% in a lot of the polling. I mean, in terms of the what's going on out there, that's a product of not a ground game, not intensity, not a lot of competition in that primary. Right. So folks are basically kind of just asleep right now on some of those races on the Democrat side. Now, does that impact in the fall? It very well may, because they haven't been mobilized, they don't have the intensity, so you have to crank that up after a long primary season where these other folks have had the advantage of being able to be out there much more directly with the voters and be able to translate that into the bigger general election in the fall.
And there's only two people running for the Democratic primary, so there will be no runoff.
Won't be a runoff. And the
second person is raising money at a level far below even the lowest state representative candidate in any of the races in Oklahoma. So it's really not a race, and that's unfortunate. We talk about wanting good competition. I mean, we're seeing races in the legislative realm where you have, for instance, in one Oklahoma City district where you have 12 candidates, all of whom are out actually running a competitive race. And that's a different dynamic than what we're seeing statewide in some of these races where we have lackluster and almost no competition.
But Edmondson has so much more money. He has as much money as the governor, the other people running for the race, and he's not having to spend it on a primary or
But
runoff.
He has spent $1 million already.
He spent a million dollars, and I think that, you know, it's I support Drew Edmondson in this race. I have a lot of respect and love for Senator Johnson, but I think that it is a shame that we're at a point where we didn't have an important conversation in this Democratic primary. If you look across the country right now, the Democratic Party itself is doing a lot of soul searching, and there's a real debate and within the Democratic Party about where does the Democratic Party stand. What are they going to look like moving forward? How do they best challenge Donald Trump? How do they best take back some of these state legislative bodies, capture some governor's seats? And that conversation did not happen in this Democratic primary. Democratic voters are going to end up with Drew Edmondson as their nominee, and I think he's going to be a fantastic candidate.
That would have been different if Scott Inman had not.
If Scott Inman had not dropped out, I think that that would have made it a much more competitive race, and you would have seen that dynamic. I think that Drew Edmondson would have been the more progressive and liberal candidate pulling there, and Scott Inman likely would have pulled a little bit further to the center and to the right. But that conversation just simply did not happen. There is a competitive, if the lack of competitive Democratic primaries, there is one, and that's in the 5th District. In this 5th Congressional District, it's crowded. And, you know, I think that Kendra Horn likely will make the runoff, almost certainly will make a runoff if there is one. She may win that outright, and if not, there are a couple of candidates, including folks like Tyson Meade, who could sneak into a runoff and make that interesting.
Could it be Tyson Meade or Tom Gild?
Tom Gild could into that. You know, he's put some last minute money in as well. That's a competitive primary. That's a conversation that's primarily happening on doorsteps right now. I mean, you've got volunteers on phones and on doors. That, I think, will benefit Democrats in the fall, whether it's not only in that 5th District race. I think Steve Russell's vulnerable to whoever that nominee is in the 5th District. But I think that the gubernatorial race, the Democratic candidate, Drew Edmondson, will benefit from an organized and mobilized 5th District race.
An investigation by the Tulsa World finds Kevin Stitt, who's running for governor, has not actually voted in the governor's race for at least 20 years. In fact, voting records show the Tulsa businessman voted a total of just 5 times since 2008, Ryan, do you think this could have any impact on the race?
You know, every campaign that I've ever worked in, one of the first things that you do in op research is you look to see whether or not your opposition has actually showed up to vote.
It's the easiest thing to look up.
It's super easy to look up. I think that it makes a powerful statement. It's one thing to be an outsider. It's another thing to not even participate. I mean, that, you know, we look at our democratic process and how important it is for people to be engaged. We talk about it here all the time. Show up and vote. Make sure your voice is heard. You know, that's the best way that you can be engaged and hold your elected officials accountable to have your voice represented in your government. I don't think it's perfect at all. I think there are election systems need to be reformed. But at the very least, man, show up. And the fact that he didn't show up is a powerful statement of where he's been. I think that it says that this, I mean, it makes it seem like this guy just woke up one day and said, I could be governor and I can buy my way into this primary, which is kind of what he's done. I can buy the name recognition. I can buy a field game. I can buy the airwaves and I can make myself a contender for governor. That's simply not enough. But I've also never really seen any objective evidence that shows that voters care about that.
Well, that's what I want to say. Even they usually don't. I don't think that the voters would usually care about your voting record. But these are primary voters. And right. If there's one thing you could say about a primary voter, they care about voting.
They do care. And I think that's in a general election, I would agree with you. But in a primary, I don't care if it's a legislative race or the governor's race. People do pay attention. And I think it's not lost on me that this is now coming out in the closing stretch of the primary when it counts, when people are still undecided. And of those that are undecided, they're looking for information. They're looking for something that separates these candidates and makes them gives them some reason to make a firm decision. So I think it has huge impact. Mm-hmm. And I think, I think Gary Richardson, one of the gubernatorial candidates, probably said it best when he said, basically, that Stitt was asking the voters to do something that he himself had not done, and that was vote in a primary for governor.
And he said that's not leadership.
That's right.
You can't be a leader and ask people to do something.
So the piling
done.
On is whether is certainly fair game in this process, and something that frankly I would have to believe the Stitt campaign was. I don't know that you can be prepared for, but you have to know and recognize that it's probably coming well before the last few days of the campaign, and that's where we are.
And his response was lame. I mean, and if you know that,
well, there really isn't a response. Yeah. I mean, we've said, I mean, I think voters that really care a lot about the election process and believe that their vote is sacred and that mm-hmm. that it is important to respect the process and be part of that process. It becomes a very high threshold to get past.
And you just described the primary voter.
That's right.
That is
that's
the primary
right.
voter. He or she cares about their voting
that's
and
right.
why they do it.
That's right.
And to miss an election or two, I mean, all of us can forget, sometimes to vote in a municipal
absolutely.
Bond election, and that
absolutely.
Happens,
and
right?
And that's why you use a composite figure when you identify how you flag a voter and say what degree of good voting
habits
that they have.
Sure, but everybody else was in their 20s
that's right.
of
that's
voting
right.
in
that's
the
right.
past
that's
10
right.
years,
that's
and he was five.
That's right.
I think of the men and women sitting overseas on a base somewhere filling out an absentee ballot
sure.
in
right.
the middle of a combat
zone. And that's
one
of the things that Todd Lamb mentioned,
yeah.
And they're mailing those things in. We have laws to protect that, to ensure that they are able to vote. And we have early, we need to have more early voting. Maybe if we had more early voting, like I've been saying, Todd Stitt would have a better
well,
record.
Well, I think this speaks to folks looking long term that may have some notion, hey, someday I might want to run for public office. I might want to be on a school board or a city council, or I might want to run for governor myself. It's important to be part of that process and engaged early on, not just decide you're going to do it when you have either the money or the passion or the wherewithal to think you have a message that may connect with the voters. So it's going to be interesting to see how this finally plays out.
If you're going to run for public office, go out there and vote.
Absolutely.
Well, and if you just want to, have a say in your government, go vote. I mean, that's
exactly.
we mentioned earlier, the polls, I mean, we're talking 1-2 percentage points separating these folks. Like I said, I haven't seen the evidence that shows that it moves folks, but if it does, that 1 or 2% could be critical.
We're now looking at, we're now looking at hundreds or a few thousand votes separating number 2 and number 3, not a million votes. And I think that gets back to that ground game of where every single vote counts. And mm-hmm. we've seen that in multiple elections in the last 20 years where someone is literally won by a handful of votes.
And that's an easy communication to folks on doorsteps. If you're a volunteer out on a door and you knock on somebody's door and they say, why vote for your candidate? You can probably tell them 2 or 3 good things about your candidate. But then sometimes those voters will say, why not these other folks? And if you've got that in your back pocket as a volunteer, you're not trying to explain some convoluted difference on tax policy.
Right.
This person hasn't showed up. Why should you show up for them?
Exactly. Staying on the subject of the elections, supporters and opponents of medical marijuana are working on last-minute efforts to get out information and get out voters to the polls. Last week, news came out that opponents of State Question 788 were spending more than $400,000 in ad buys while supporters were battling what they call a wave of disinformation about the measure. Neva, any thoughts on where you see this vote ending on Tuesday?
Well, I see it ending very close. I mean, there's still speculation on the pro side that it's going to be this wide margin, but every indication with the, with what we're seeing now with this infusion of a lot of dollars on the no side and just people now with most state questions, they wait till the end. They wait till they get their ballot if they're going to absentee. They wait until a weekend or two before the election and they start reading or trying to find out information. And that's where we're at in this. And so it's a very competitive. Both sides have their arguments well laid out trying to make. And I think what we see is what was a double-digit wide lead just weeks ago now is a single-digit margin between the yes and the no. And to me, what that says is who comes out to vote, they will be well-informed, they will be very definite on their opinion, yes and no, and then it will be really a reflection, I think, of where those votes are in terms of just the composition statewide. That may make the overall difference. Is it the metropolitan areas versus the rural,
right,
or is it a combination of everything?
Right.
Yeah, I think turnout's going to determine sure who or what the margin is here. I do think that there's still enough support out there for 788 to pass. I think that there's a possibility that it could pass with a comfortable margin, but I would say that every vote counts right now. There and the folks on both sides of this understand that. The pro 788 crowd, the yes on 788 groups are out doing a lot of grassroots organizing that I think will have long-lasting political effect in the state of Oklahoma around cannabis policy, whether it's having to regroup in the what I think is the unlikely event that 788 fails. They've got a solid political machine. But let's assume that 788 does pass, which I think that it will. You're going to immediately walk into a legislative special session to begin to draft regulations on how this will unroll in the state of Oklahoma in a responsible, safe, and effective way. And having that political machine on the ground is going to be very important to be able to go lobby legislators and to ensure that the spirit of what the voters approved is upheld by the legislature and improved upon by the legislature. I think a lot of the disinformation about this is that it creates a recreational marijuana program when in fact it just does not. It is drafted in a very broad way, but that's good. I mean, it doesn't paint our legislators into a corner of saying that they have to either work through a constitutional amendment process or through changing substantive statutes that were just approved by the voters. It gives them a lot of latitude to create a safe, effective, and responsible regulatory scheme that will unroll after this thing is passed. I've seen everything. If you look at the folks that have lined up against this and the amount of money that's being spent against it, I think that you can group the folks into two categories. One is that medical marijuana, medical cannabis, and the idea that we're going to begin to legalize these patients, that upsets their worldview, a narrow worldview, or it disrupts a business model. And that business model is everything from big pharmaceutical companies that make a ton of money off of the opioid industry, or law enforcement that have a lot of money by arresting patients and seizing their cash and property. It upsets those business models. It disrupts them in a way, and they're out there doing everything they can to make sure that this thing fails. I think that they are not going to be successful in that effort, but they are going to cut into the margin.
Okay. And anything else that we think we should be watching this Tuesday? Is there another election?
To me, it's the big thing I'm watching is what the turnout will really
right.
be. I mean, we're seeing and election boards are saying that they're preparing for a larger than normal primary turnout. The state question being one component in factoring that, as well as just the wide number of contested races statewide, particularly on the Republican ballot. But I think that will be the key. Is there intensity? Are they paying attention and really going to make their statement made at the polling booth? Are they just going to have an opinion and sit home and kind of see what the results are? And I think that's a big challenge that we have right now. I mean, we've got a lot of folks, particularly younger voters, who have opinions, seem to be peripherally engaged in some of these issues, but they do not have a track record, as we've just talked about, of someone who goes to the polls with regularity. And I think when you start talking June 26th, primary, summer, even with what we see as this barrage of last-minute communication on all levels, will that bring a new level of voter out in Oklahoma? That's going to be the thing I want to look at on Wednesday morning.
And we had a story went Thursday morning about how it's almost doubled the amount of registered voters in the past four than they did 4 years ago. So that's got to mean something. I know the pro-medical marijuana people say those are their people.
I think that they are, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of engagement we actually see out of those new voters. Do they actually show up to the polls? I think that they do. I think that there's a reason that they registered. Another race that I would put on everybody's radar to take a look at is the Tulsa County District Attorney's race. Steve Kunstwaller, the incumbent, is facing opposition from Ben Fu and Tammy Westcott, two candidates that are challenging him on his anti criminal justice reform efforts, both as because of the use of his prosecutorial discretion to continue to be harsh in prosecuting nonviolent drug crimes, but also themselves competing to be the reform candidate in the event that one of them ends up in a runoff with him. And so you could have an incumbent district attorney in a runoff in Tulsa County, and that could be a conversation about criminal justice reform. Criminal justice reform really meets the road with district attorneys. There's not a single more powerful person in the criminal justice system that has a bigger impact on the state's incarceration rate than our elected district attorneys.
With the possibility of attorney general, which I do want to get to, the attorney general's race, big, huge, heated Republican side race. Do you expect any surprises? There is a possibility of a runoff.
Well, there is, and I think what we have seen is, again, given the level of spending and just the intensity of that race and the fact that that it went very negative very early and stayed that way. And how does that affect voters? I mean, primary voters are a little more attuned to that because you typically have the mix-it-up kind of campaigns where there is a little harder engagement sometimes. But that being said, people grow weary of that when it goes for a prolonged period of time, and sometimes that begins to influence influence the votes. And quite frankly, the attacker from the outside sometimes comes up short on that equation. It'll be interesting to see in this instance. And you have the geography issue. I mean, you have a Tulsa candidate, Oklahoma City candidate. That becomes a factor in these races in terms of turnout. Mm-hmm. And we've seen different election years where it's swayed back and forth in terms of what the intensity is. You have a first district congressional race that should play into that in terms of the fact that they are mobilized and running very what appears to be at least decently competitive ground games on the Republican side. So there's a lot there, and I think the state question, the wild card, is when people come out and they are only interested in one question, and then they see all these names and all of these races on their ballot and they haven't paid much attention, what do they do? Do they vote name recognition? Do they not vote? Do they vote based on whatever the last thing they saw or impression they had? And that oftentimes, as we well know, causes some upsets. So, I mean, we're going to see when the dust settles, some things happen that we could not have predicted, and then we're trying to figure out, why was that? Was it the state question? Was it something else that popped up right here in the closing stretch this last weekend? It remains
was
to be
it the
seen.
Last commercial?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well,
and Gettner Drummond and Mike Hunter, they have thrown everything but the kitchen sink at each other, and so have their proxies. I mean, they've had political proxies both in the media and outside the media throwing everything. I mean, this has been one of the most intense statewide primary campaigns in recent memory. Maybe going back to the state superintendent race. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think we've seen anything like that since then. But I really think, going back to our earlier conversation, it's going to come down to who can get their voters out. Turnout, there's going to be a turnout model that they're going to have some effect on, but a lot of that's going to be out of their control. Voters are going to show up or they're not. But they can, if we're talking about a race that's going to come down to a matter of thousands of votes, that's something that candidates can affect, and they can affect that with an effective field strategy. I don't know what those look like for either of those campaigns, but I think on Tuesday, whoever the winner is, if there's going to be any deciding factor, it's going to be who was able to get out on those doors, on the phones, and make sure that their supporters showed up on election day.
And of course, it could also be a bellwether for what we're going to see if in the runoff for a governor's race, because once it's down to two people, it could get
all
pretty
bets are
nasty.
Right. That's right. That's where the contrast and that's where the change in messaging really will come in that race. That race will look much different because you'll have whoever the two folks are that wind up being the runoff in the runoff, they will have a very decided, I think, focus on how they're going to take that campaign to the end of August and try to actually be the party nominee.
And I think how close the polls have been on the gubernatorial race have been on the Republican side have been why we haven't seen those folks go negative. I kind of anticipated that at some point that Lamb would get a more comfortable lead and then somebody would be battling for that second and third post.
But it really hasn't happened that
and
way.
That one of them would have to go negative. But right now it's just too risky.
And I think
it
remains to be
negative.
Seen because what we very well may have is a breakout of a candidate that runs with some real margin in Tuesday's election, and then you'll have two and three much more, you know, or two, three, four, and five much more clustered in terms of who's going to be in that second place.
One prediction that I feel really comfortable making is that a lot of people are going to be scraping those massive Dan Fisher bumper stickers off their back windows that I see all over. If massive windshield stickers voted, Dan Fisher would be our next governor.
But, you know, the interesting thing about that is that is a typical block of votes in a Republican primary that are folks that always go out. They will go out and they do care about their issues and they will be interested in the two choices that they have in August of where those folks are on those issues and who they believe is going to best reflect their views on that issue. And that will be interesting to see how that really shapes up as we move forward.
Both candidates will be working hard to get that Dan Fisher.
Absolutely.
Vote. Voter, yeah. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.